Hey.
This is On the Couch, your connection to the world of mental health. Exploring all things related to daily living. Your hosts, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
And here we are again for another episode of On the Couch. My name is Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
And I'm Benny Massey, LPCC, and you are on the couch.
Today's episode, we plan on discussing parenting roles and the roles of the parents. We want to also encourage you to call in and talk with us. Give us your feedback, thoughts, ask us any questions you might have.
Our number is 917-889-3093.
And when you call in, you'll be put on hold. You will be able to listen to our episode over your phone, and we will bring you up. And please, when we bring you up live, give us your first name, and you will be on the couch with us. So today's episode is all about parenting.
Working in mental health, we work with a lot of parents who present with their children. And we just want to try and give you some framework on how you can best help your child flourish.
And again, I want to encourage you to call in 917-889-3093, talking about roles of parents. And I think one thing that Benny touched on, working in mental health, we, you know, encounter the parents of children either as a client or as the parent of the client when the child is the client. And I think one thing that I come across is a lot of times if the child is working and trying to do well, but the parent's not involved in the therapeutic process.
Yes. It's very important for the parent to have a say and definitely give us direction on actions and behaviors that the child might be experiencing, so that we can address those issues with the client and try to explore what's causing that uproar or that issue to surface.
Are there sometimes also when the behaviors of the parents need to be addressed as well instead of just addressing the child's behaviors?
And a lot of times I would say that parents are, they're just very busy with day-to-day lives. Actually, parenting should be the first and foremost job of the individual, but we understand that people have to work, people have other obligations. So it's important for parents to know expectations that not only the kids have, but they should have for themselves on how to direct and help that child to flourish and grow.
And as the child flourishes and grows, the parent can also flourish and grow as a parent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's important. It's imperative that parents are involved. And in today's day and age, we have technology that pulls us a lot from the responsibility of everything, not just parenting, but, you know, just checking in with friends and families from work and having family dinners, things of that nature. We're constantly looking at our phones. We're constantly just doing things that if you're a parent, I think it's imperative for you to be attuned to what your child is doing, as well as keeping them on a schedule and a regimen to help them stay on track.
And I think you also mentioned, you know, the family dinners. And I think as a family, if you can sit down and have dinner together once a week, twice a week, how often do you think that would help the family come together and stay together? Daily, or is that too much to ask now?
I think daily would be wonderful. I think if you could have family dinners daily, it would help you to bond and help you to address a lot of issues and just day-to-day happenings. But I understand that's pretty difficult in this day and age. So I would say at the very least, try to have it 2 to 3 times a week.
2 to 3 times a week. That also gives the parent and the child a chance to check in with each other, see where the child is as far as what's going on. It also gives the parent a chance to kind of put their expectations out there for the child as well if the child's not quite doing what they're supposed to be doing.
And I think a lot of times nowadays parents are hesitant to query or ask their children about certain things. Kids are so involved with their cell phones and technology today that it's important for us to pull them away from that and for us to set limits around that.
Wow.
Because it's addictive. It's an addictive action and a behavior that, and we too, as parents, and adults are guilty of that as well. So if it's difficult and we struggle with it, just imagine what our kids are going through when we give them free rein.
And I think one thing that I experience quite a bit in sessions with children, cell phones, electronics. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had a child say, "My mom can't take my phone from me." What are your thoughts about that, Mr. Benny?
I think if they bought it and if they pay the bill, well, I don't think I know. You have every right to put restrictions on it and to control it. And even if you have a wonderful child in your estimation and your belief, I still think you should regularly check the cell phone without feeling guilty or feeling bad or feeling like you're invading their privacy. It is imperative that you engage and check those phones and see what they're looking at, what they're exposed to.
I think one thing I always tell the parents as well, if you give your child the cell phone, make sure the child knows that it's your cell phone. You're just going to let the child use it. That way you can remain and keep the ownership of the actual cell phone. You know, you could tell little Billy, "Hey, Billy, this is my cell phone. You can use it, but if I want it, I get it back when I ask."
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think it's real important as well to ask your child for their phone instead of demand that they give it to you, because I mean, you have to give them the opportunity to do what you are asking them for. You know, "Hey, Billy, is it okay? Can I have your cell phone or have my cell phone back?" And then that gives Billy the opportunity to be responsible with the phone and follow through. However, there will be times when little Billy doesn't give up the cell phone.
See, and I think maybe we differ a little bit in that arena. I believe that you should be more strict and more firm in saying, "I need the cell phone," because I believe, well, in my experience as being a mental health professional, I've seen kids decompose per se and need to they become very depressed, very suicidal. They feel very, the word I would think of or comes to mind is naked. They feel like you can't do this. This is mine, and you have no right to take this from me. And if you do that, it can cause, if structure is not in place and expectations of "this is not your phone, I'm going to let you use it" is not in place and not understood thoroughly, it can cause a lot of problems and issues.
But I think one thing as well, and again, we differ on this, and that's okay, because there are different ways to raise your parent or raise your child. But I think when you make a great point that the child can feel kind of naked and exposed when you say, "Give me the phone," that's why I think when you ask the child for the phone, it keeps them a little bit in control of the situation as well. You know, it's a shared mutual responsibility back and forth about the phone instead of, "I'm the parent, you give me the phone." I know that's popular with a lot of parents, but I do believe that, especially once a child becomes a teenager, if you can give them a little autonomy and allow them to feel like they have a little bit of control, then a lot of times they will respond appropriately. And if they don't, you're right, Benny, that's when the parent has to step in and exercise their authority as parent.
And I guess that's what I would ask you, Earl. If they don't and they say, "No, it's mine," then how do you proceed from there? How would you proceed from there?
Well, I think it depends really on the history of your relationship with the child. I think if you've had a pretty strong and excellent communication with your child in the past, then that avenue hopefully will still be open to communicate with your child. Look, I know you don't want to give it to me, and I gave you the option to give it to me, and you chose not to. So what do you think the consequences should be? But I need your phone. Does that make sense? Because if you've had an open line of communication and all of a sudden it's breaking down, then there's more there to explore than just the cell phone. You know, it might be like you said, what does the child have on the cell phone that he or she is trying to hide? And at that point, I think if you notice, you know, changes in your child's behavior or interactions, I think it's time to change it up a little bit and maybe not be so open to allowing the child to maintain control. But
I can respect that. I kind of agree with it after you explained it, because you're not conceding your authority. You're trying to negotiate and have that relationship and give them, not pull the total power away from them, allow them to experience it and make better choices. But if it comes down to it, you always have that card you can pull. You do pay for the phone. It is, you know, your responsibility to pay for it. You gave it to them. I usually tell my clients that I wouldn't give my parents of my clients, that I wouldn't, if I haven't given them a cell phone, I probably wouldn't do it until they're about 16 or 17. And wow. And those people and those individuals, those parents, because many of them have already given the cell phone to their children, I'd say if you've already given it to them, I'm not by any means saying to confiscate it and take it back. However, I am saying you need to be diligent in checking that phone regularly, because there's so much on the smartphones now, they can come across things that they're not even looking at.
And I think also if you do suspect that your child has been looking at things that they shouldn't be, I want to also say that you can take your phone or the phone that your child has to Best Buy or somewhere like that and ask them to look for different apps that can hide things on their phones. Because unfortunately, kids have gotten smarter, cell phones have gotten smarter, and it's easy for the child to hide things on their cell phone that might look like a calculator, where really it's an app to do nefarious things and, you know, things that the child shouldn't be exposed to.
Actually, I would encourage you to take it. I wasn't aware of that resource that you could go to Best Buy and look for certain apps. And I wasn't aware that there are apps that can hide things. I think a lot of adults aren't aware of that. But now that you have that information, even if you look at the phone, that might be an avenue that you want to definitely check into to make sure.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the ultimate control that you have as the parent is paying the bill. You know, if your child won't give you the phone, then you can call your carrier and say, hey, turn off little Billy's phone. We're going to turn it off. And I think if you do that, it's important also to let little Billy know, hey, I turned your phone off. When you're ready to let me have it, we can talk about it and discuss what's going on. But, you know, totally. So
very, very good. I was going to say rebuttal, but very good response, because, again, I'm thinking you have to get the phone from the child, but you can turn it off. You mm-hmm. can suspend it. So you really don't need the phone physically. You can turn it off, and you can turn off the Wi-Fi, actually. What do you think, Earl, about schools and behaviors at schools and the roles that parents play in that with dealing with teachers and dealing with behaviors that teachers bring up?
Well, I'll tell you what I think, Benny, but before I get into that, I want to encourage our listeners, to call in at 917-889-3093 and give us some feedback as to what we're talking about as far as the children, cell phones, or schools' behaviors, and, you know, we'll get you on the air. But my thoughts are that I think a parent should be involved as much as they can be. I know earlier you mentioned that parents have to work, and unfortunately, a lot of parents work during the same time that their kids are in school. But I do believe it's important for a parent to, if possible, touch base in some way with maybe the counselor at school or the principal. But I do believe that if you start noticing your child is acting out a little bit more, especially the younger ones not wanting to go to school, then that's where the parent, I think, needs to step in and, you know, go to the school personally and see if there's maybe some bullying or something like that going on.
I would agree. And I think what I'm seeing now, I feel that a lot of times, and I think it goes both ways, but I'm pretty much old school, and I come from the train of thought that teachers need support from parents. And when I was young, it didn't matter what you went home and told mama. If the teacher called or sent a note and said anything, your parents took that as word, and that's what was happening. And then you progress from there. Definitely punishment. Definitely, until I speak with this teacher one-on-one, until we have this meeting, you are restricted. And nowadays, I'm seeing a difference in that. I'm seeing more flexibility, which to me is giving them submission or giving them the approval to behave in whatever manner they choose.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Benny. And one thing I would add to that, I agree to a point that, you know, when the child comes home, the parent, you know, says, hey, I got a call from the school. This is what they're telling me. And we'll work it out after we talk to the teacher or whatever. Then go in and have a face-to-face meeting with the teacher. But I do believe, and this is really important from my perspective, that it's important for the child also to have input as to this is what I saw happen. But I think it's important that the child and the parent have an open line of communication. Again, I go back to that, to where that the child can be comfortable coming home and telling his mom, hey, mom, my buddy Bob had a firecracker and we lit it and tried to throw it out the window and it didn't go out and it went off in English class. Now I'm suspended, you know. And then the important thing is for the parents not to overreact. You know, kids are going to do stupid things. Kids are going to do stupid things at school. And I'm a firm believer that if they don't do anything stupid and hurt themselves or another child or a parent or a teacher, then it can be resolved without screaming and yelling and, you know, resorting to inappropriate actions.
I agree with that. I do, however, believe accountability is very imperative, very important aspect to have. You have to hold kids accountable. And we, I think a lot of times now parents tend to be more laxed.
Yeah, and I think, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think the important thing is accountability, especially with teenagers, and that's where I think to hold a teenager accountable, I think it's important to let them also let you know what happened from their perspective. That way, besides the fact that you're modeling appropriate communication skills with your teenager, you're also letting them know that what you say is important, and the more you can let them know that, the better the chances are they're going to tell you the truth. Because once you start catching your child in lies about what happened at school, then their credibility goes down and you're not going to want to hear it, you know? And so that breaks down the communication as well.
I agree. Please, again, we would accept and we encourage you to give us a call. Our number is 917-889-3093. Again, that's 917-889-3093.
Benny, we've talked a lot today about what the parents are responsible for, like school and, you know, cell phones, electronics, those kind of things. I'd like to kind of also touch on what are some things that parents aren't responsible for that sometimes they get caught up in. You know, I'm sure you've seen it where parents feel like they are responsible for the child's happiness. You know, it's their role to make sure that their child is happy. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, no one can be happy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I think it's imperative for a parent to help their child accept reality and know how to respond to real situations. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Sometimes you're happy, sometimes you're sad. And all of that is fluid. So you're going to be up, you're going to be down, but if we can communicate and you can vent about whatever it is you're feeling, you know, we can get through this together. That's just a part of life. I don't think it's parents' responsibility or their role to make their child happy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah, definitely. And that kind of goes back to what you mentioned earlier as well about setting limits with your children. No child is going to like having limits set. And so they might get upset with you. And if you're a parent, you probably heard your child say, I hate you, you know, but I think it's important to realize that that's a response to what kind of consequences you're putting in place at that time as well. So, yeah.
Well, and again, that is, I mean, that tidbit of information I just gave about emotions being fluid, that's for the parent too. Your children are going to say things to you sometimes that you don't like and you don't feel good about, but you have to understand they have that right to express themselves, and you need to be adult and mature enough to accept it and deal with it and know that this is not, you know, set in stone. This is an emotion that they're going through and experiencing at the time.
Right. And we want to encourage you to call in 917-889-3093. And to touch on what you mentioned, Benny, I think a lot of times, if there are parents out there listening, how many times have you told your child to take a time out? Your child might be upset, screaming, yelling, throwing a tantrum, and you tell them to take a time out. I think it's important for the parents to be aware of, it's okay for you to take a time out as well. If you have to remove yourself from the situation, do it by all means, because you don't want to get into a power struggle with your child. You don't want to get into an argument with your child, because usually from what I've seen, and you can talk about this a little bit, when a parent and child get into an argument, neither side wins. All that ends up happening is they escalate and they either start yelling back and forth at each other and they don't know what they're talking about. So
I would agree with that. And I think, it's in many ways stooping to that immature level. My parents oftentimes to think out of the box. And if you're getting too entrenched in what's going on, or you're getting angry or emotional, you need to take a time out. You need to step away from the situation and regroup, and so that you can come back and be the best parent that you can be. But sitting there and arguing and having a power struggle, no one wins at that.
Right. And one thing we can also talk about, and there's a name for it now, it's called helicopter parents. The parent who hovers over their child, always involved in your child's activities. What are your thoughts about the parent who has to be involved with their child at all times, going to all their dance recitals? Well, not necessarily recitals, but school dances, prom, you know, those different types of things.
I'm actually fine with it. What I believe about it, or what I think about it, is I think you should show your child or your children as much support and love as you possibly can. The issue that I have is when your child is on a basketball team and they lose, but you want them to get a trophy too, or they hurt themselves and you overly pamper them. I think they need to know that bad things happen from time to time, and you're strong, and this too shall pass. So you want to be there to support them, but you want them to experience those difficult times, because I believe it makes them stronger.
Yeah, and so if they're having a difficult time, it's important to let them work through it on their own instead of trying to fix it for them. Because it's like you say, if you fix all their problems for them, they have no problem-solving skills to utilize when they get out in the real world and become a parent of their own.
I agree. I think that's accurate, yes.
Okay, so once again, we're asking you if you'd like to call in. Give us a call, 917-889-3093, and we'll take your call all the way up until it's time for us to go. But one more thing we could talk about as well about parents is, you know, the financial part of the parent responsibility and role. What are your thoughts about parents giving their children allowances, weekly allowances?
I think weekly allowances for accomplishments as far as grades or as far as chores is a good thing. I think that you should not incentivize behaviors that are expected. But I think if they know they have a certain chore and this is your duty and you want to reward them for that or their grades, I think that's good. I think that's great.
I think what you said is real important too, not to incentivize expectations, you know, because I mean, if your child's supposed to be taking out the garbage, then cool, he needs to take out the garbage. But if he takes the garbage out and then takes it out to the curb, which is something that you didn't expect from him, then, you know, give him a little bit of added incentive. But yeah, I think giving him a salary or a allowance to take out the garbage is okay, as long as you make sure that they do their chore without just giving it to them for the heck of it.
And I agree with that. What, when you mentioned financial, the first thing I thought about, however, is letting your child or informing your child about the difficult finances you might be experiencing.
Right.
And I don't think that's ever good.
Right.
I know that's difficult because when we're stressed and we're going through financial hard times, it can show itself, but I think it's very important for us to keep that away from our children.
I think you're right, and I think that's when, like I said earlier about taking the time out, I think that's when, if you're a single parent, you need to kind of find someone you can reach out to, even outside of the home. And if you're a two-parent family, step off away from your child if you need to discuss the financial issues, because one thing that's really important, if your child knows about your financial issues, it's going to cause stress on them as well. And you might start seeing some acting out at school, in the playground, or in the park. And that's really important.
And it kind of takes me back again to when I was young. I just recall my parents being super parents in that there was no financial issue my father couldn't handle, or, you know, he could handle anything. Although I'm sure now that I'm an adult looking back, he faced a lot of financial issues, but I didn't know about that. So it kind of builds your confidence and builds your thought process that you can achieve, because my dad's doing it and he's taking care of the family and we live really good. He's a hard worker. You get that sense of perseverance.
Wow, and that's a great example as well, because like you say, your father may have been struggling financially, but you didn't know about it. So therefore, you didn't have to worry about that as a child either. And something you said, I think, that's really important as well, you were able to look at your dad and say, he's making things work. And that gave you, like you say, the ability to have that perseverance as you got older as well, because you saw your dad going to work and you didn't realize if they were struggling that there was a struggle there.
Right. Absolutely. So on that note, I would encourage any parents, that role is to, again, seek someone who you can talk to, vent to, express yourself with, because you are going to need someone to talk to. But I wouldn't share that. I would encourage you all, parents, not to share that with your child. I don't think it's helpful in any way, shape, or form.
No, and one thing also, and this is important, and I know Mr. Benny's going to agree with me, I think it's important for parents to realize there's a difference in being your child's parent and being your child's friend. You are not your child's friend. Maybe when they become an adult, you can be, but during their growing process, you need to be a parent.
I agree 500%.
Just real quick, and I'll give you an example of what I tell parents every now and then as well. If the child's next door neighbor, the kid next door, comes over and tells your son to make the bed and your son says, no, I'm not going to, the neighbor kid can do nothing. If you walk in and tell your child to make the bed and your child looks at you like a friend, he doesn't have to do it then either, because you're his friend just like the kid next door. Whereas if you keep that boundary and that limit to where that your child knows that you're the parent and you're on a different level than the kid next door, you're the parent, not the friend, then you can set those limits with your child more successful.
One of the things that I recall is growing up, my parents would always say, I'm not your friend, I'm your parent. And that was a clear-cut expectation. And I think we need to do more of that. We're not saying you can't be friends with your kids and bond with them in that way, but they need to have a clear expectation that that's not the goal, that I love you, but I'm always mom or I'm always dad, and you need to listen. I'm going to lead you in the right direction as a parent.
Right. And as we draw to an end, I'd like to say thank you guys for listening. And if you happen to have any ideas for future shows, drop us an email. We read them all. Our email address is listentoonthecouch@gmail.com. We will reply. We get a lot of emails, so it might take us a while. But thank you so much for listening.
Come back and see us soon.
On the Couch, your connection to the world of mental health. Exploring all things related to daily living. Your hosts, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.